This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The campaign to eliminate the horrors of child labor has a long way to go. Nearly a quarter billion children between the ages of 5 and 17 currently work under conditions that are considered illegal, hazardous, or extremely exploitative. And the global economic slowdown isn't helping. But there is a continuum of children at work: child soldiers, factory slaves, and the sex trade on one end, at the other, families who rely on kids to work on the family farm or get a job at a fast food joint to help in hard times. Somewhere in the middle, there's a gray area. Whenever you think about a job, if it robs a child of their future or just helps out the family, might just depend on how good the rest of your choices are. So where do you draw that line in your family? Tell us your story. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, did Fidel say the Cuban economic model doesn't work anymore? Julia Swag joins us, but first, child labor. And we begin with Jane Stewart, Special Representative and Director of the International Labor Organization's Office to the United Nations, formerly Minister of Human Resources in Canada. She joins us from NPR's Bureau in New York. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
It's a pleasure, Neil. Thanks for the opportunity.
And obviously, child soldiers, sexual exploitation is unacceptable under any circumstances. Once you get into the gray area, those, don't different cultures draw those lines in different places?
At the ILO, we look at child labor quite specifically, and maybe it's a good place to start to talk about what child labor is. As you point out, Neil, there are the unconditional worst forms of child labor that must be eliminated. Those are slavery and prostitution, pornography, illicit activities. There's also labor that jeopardizes the physical or mental and moral well-being of a child, and that's called hazardous work. But then there is also, and this is very important, labor performed by a child who's under the minimum age. And this is important because working can impede the child's education and full development. And for healthy and robust and productive societies, having children well-educated and able to engage at the right age in productive activities is really important.
And at the same time, if they're not obviously allowed to pursue their education, that just, perpetuate poverty.
It is. It's a vicious cycle then. And one of the things that we know to be true is the more education a young child has the opportunity to have, the better able he or she is to participate in healthy youth employment activities and then go on to be a real contributor, supporting themselves and their families.
Well, I think something, according to a report that came out last spring from your organization, 50% of all people in developing countries working today work in agriculture. Well, does that count as exploitative or not?
There's no question. When we look at the sectors where child labor occurs, agriculture is probably the largest. About 60% of the child labor is in the agricultural sector. The challenge is to really drill down and deal with the root causes of child labor. And when we're talking about agriculture, it means we've got to increase the productivity of parents who are providing for their families through agricultural means to make sure the infrastructure is there and to help them in that regard. We also have to be sure that quality free education is available for their children and that there are social protection programs in place that will allow parents to work and children to go to school. So projects like we see in Brazil and other countries in Latin America, where there is a conditional cash contribution to a family when the child goes to school, is one of the solutions that gets at the roots of child labor.
Well, does the ILO help with that? I mean, what does this organization actually do other than say this is a terrible thing?
Well, first, you know, listeners might be interested to know that the International Labor Organization is not just a place where governments come to talk about policy, but we're what we call a tripartite organization that includes governments, workers' organizations, and employers' organizations. So here the real economy actually comes together and deals with the issues of the labor market. One of the big outcomes of our work together are international labor standards. And certainly the office assists governments, workers, and employers to implement those standards, to determine if, in fact, countries that have ratified the standards are applying them. And that's a big part of our work. But we also know that we can provide and help workers, employers, and governments figure out how to get at these root causes, for example, in the area of youth employment, And we have a very large program, the International Program for the Elimination of Child Labor, where on the ground we go together and build solutions and test programs and strategies that can actually deal with the challenge.
Can you give us an example of one of these ideas that worked?
Yeah, more recently, for example, in Bahia State in Brazil, which is working to become a child labor-free state, we are taking an area-wide look at the issues associated with child labor. We're going to look at all the sectors where children maybe do find themselves employed in what can be called child labor, and identify how to eliminate the opportunities that seem to present themselves there. We're looking at the social realities facing their parents and looking at the social programs that need to be extended to assist them. But we're taking a whole area approach, because what you don't want to happen is for a child to leave child labor in one sector, for example, agriculture, and then go into another sector because that's really the only alternative. So the approaches are integrated, they're inclusive, they're at the community level, including the community as well as workers, employers. There's social dialogue that's very much a part of finding the way forward because it is challenging. And you don't just go in and say, okay, now this is the, you know, no more kids in work. It doesn't work that way. It's you've got to really identify the root causes associated with it in a particular area, in a particular community, and dig down and deal with those directly.
And earlier you told us what kind of factors make it unacceptable. Is there a similar list of factors that make it acceptable when a kid works?
Not all work done by children is child labor and needs to be eliminated. There are children and adolescents who participate in work that doesn't affect their health or their personal development or interfere with their schooling and can be generally regarded as being something that's positive. It can include, you know, helping the parents around the home or assisting in certain activities associated with a family business or earning pocket money outside of the school hours. So, and our conventions are quite specific in detailing what is and what isn't child labor. So it's not, as you pointed out at the top of the show, it's not black and white, mm-hmm. but I'll tell you, it's pretty clear in the conventions what can be and should be considered child labor and what we're trying to work towards here. And really, fundamentally, it's looking at our children and saying, look, we know they need a good education. We know they need a good meal. We know they need parents who are able to earn enough to support themselves and their families. We know they need to have access to health care and social mm-hmm. programs that that can support them. And we really do know how to do it. You know, we really do. And it takes political will, and it does take financing.
We're talking with Jane Stewart of the International Labor Organization, the organization's representative for the United Nations. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Where do you draw the line on kids at work in your family? And let's begin with Mark. And Mark's calling us from Parkville in Missouri.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I started working in my father's print shop when I was about 8. It was always voluntary. We were always paid at the same rate. We often did bindery piece work at the same rates that adults could, and kids' hands can be fast, and we actually were able to earn quite nicely under those conditions. Also did things like emptying waste baskets, but Dad was extremely safety conscious.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, those presses can be dangerous.
Oh, well, we were taught to stay away from them. These are the dangerous places, and keep yourself away from them. We also learned a great deal about how the folks made the money that we all lived off of, and how hard they worked. So in my experience, it was a very good thing.
And how much time did you do that, after school?
After school, yeah. It never interfered with school. Nothing interfered with school in our family.
And how much was this for pocket change?
Oh, it could be more than pocket change. If there were a lot of binder work to do and I felt like doing it, I could make quite a lot. I supported my model railroad habit for quite a while nicely with that kind of money.
So the Lionel Company was happy about this?
Actually, it was
H.O.?
Athern, H.O., yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. Mark, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. And Jane Stewart, that sounds like something that, does not fall within the rules of child labor.
Well, the way Mark described it, some of it might not. Again, kids at a certain age are able to do some things and not able to do other things. I mean, a small child is not really able to drive a big tractor. A small child is not really able to deal with heavy equipment. These things are just completely unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just don't want to go there, I don't think, as a parent, and no matter what. I mean, emptying the waste baskets, you know, fine. That's not an issue. Earning some pocket change is not an issue, but the fact of the matter is kids can get hurt, and they can get hurt much more easily than adults. And these are the kinds of things that we're dealing with when we're talking about child labor.
And we think of, again, the phrase brings up images of kids chained to loom somewhere in India or Pakistan, or as you say, kids working on farms in Africa or South America. We, in this country, in your home country, Canada, like to think we're different, are we?
Well, it's interesting to note that the kinds of comments that Mark are making do happen. I mean, it's been encouraging to hear Secretary of State Solis actually identify here that, yeah, you know, there is child labor that goes on in the United States, and this is something we've got to deal with. I mean, part of that probably is because she's seen it. She comes from a state where migrant workers are engaged in the agricultural sector, and, you know, there are real issues associated with that, and she's been quite open about saying, we've got to do better. We've got to deal with this. And I think that's a very positive message to the world.
And again, primarily the agriculture sector is what you're talking about?
Agriculture, for one. You'll hear others talk about the fact that there is trading in children, trafficking in children. You may hear about the odd issues associated with even a sweatshop or a fast food place, but those are one-off circumstances. But primarily, again, agriculture, as in other countries, is where you find the majority of child labor occurring.
Jane Stewart, and just a reminder to those who joined us late, when she speaks of child labor, by definition, that means things that are unacceptable under conditions charters by the International Labor Organization, for which she works in New York as its representative to the United Nations. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, email us talk@npr.org. Where do you draw the line in your family? What kind of choices did you have? I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Just yesterday, the U.S. government and the chocolate industry announced a partnership to help end child labor, some of it forced and dangerous, with the Ivory Coast and Ghana, where much of the world's cocoa is grown. But there's a long continuum between the worst kind of work on cocoa farms and kids taking a job to help out their family in the recession. Where do you draw the line? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guest is Jane Stewart, Special Representative and Director of the International Labor Organization's Office to the United Nations. She's at our bureau in New York. And let's see if we can get Arcadia on the line. Arcadia calling from Philadelphia.
Hi. I'm calling because I had an experience as a teenager of seeing child labor up close when my family joined the Eastern Mennonites in upstate New York. And I observed a really big, I would call it child slavery, because the children that are born to those families, they have absolutely no choice about the direction of their life. They're put to work as soon as they can walk. I lived with families that had dairy farms, and they were waking up in the middle of the night to milk the cows, as well as during the day, waking up small toddlers and bringing them out. I did see a lot of children getting injured, and in the 2 years that I was going to the Mennonite Church, I actually even attended a funeral for a little girl who fell off a tractor and was run over by her father, who didn't notice she'd fallen asleep. So there was all kinds of ranges of injuries and death. And my brother, who was 14 when we moved there, was put to work on a pig farm. And he had no experience in farms prior to moving there. And they suddenly were working him 16 hours a day. And he has permanent hearing damage from mm-hmm. the screaming of the pigs. And he has back damage from the weight of the loads that he was forced to carry during work. So it was kind of horrible for him for the rest of his life. He'll have these injuries.
Arcadia, I'm sure that the people would explain this is our way of life, this is our tradition. Indeed, it's part of our religion.
That's right, and that's how it was explained. And no one really questioned it. And most of the people living there, they had no other way. They had no basis of comparison,
sure,
because they're pretty well sheltered from exposure to, you know, environments where that kind of thing would be frowned upon. And then when they do go out into the community, you know, they're viewed as, you know, quaint quilters and farmers, and it looks very wholesome on mm-hmm. the outside. But having been on the inside, I just saw it as, like, there was, like, horrific violations of childhood, and that these children were working so long, so hard, in such dangerous situations, coupled with the fact that they weren't, most of them weren't even allowed to continue going to school past eighth grade. There was a church school,
mm-hmm.
and then most children were pulled from school at the legal minimum, and then immediately, you know, forced into whatever their families.
Let me just pose a question to Jane Stewart. The Eastern Mennonites are not the only group that feels this way or treats their children like that. What do you do in that situation?
There are laws. And that's what these conventions are about, to help countries to pass and articulate legislation that can deal with the issues of child labor. It means you do have to have monitoring, and you have to have strong labor institutions. But these are the kinds of things that we're talking about. You know, economies evolve, and we know now that these are things that are not positive in terms of child development and in terms of a bright and strong future. And these are things that need to be dealt with.
I hear that, but this group says, wait a minute, this is a violation of our religious freedom.
But these are fundamental standards that are now part of a society when they're passed in legislation, and they apply to all citizens. So these are the kinds this articulation, and, you know, this is Arcadia's experience, mm-hmm. so I can't comment on her experience, but there's an element that I would like to draw on, which is this question of the minimum age and the relationship to education. And, Neil, when we're looking at the minimum age, we really do connect the two parts and identify that the minimum age for work shouldn't be less than the age of completion of compulsory schooling, and in any case shouldn't be less than 15. But that linkage between work and school is fundamental to our approach to dealing with child labor and, as I say, getting at the root causes of it.
Arcadia, we can hear in the background you've got some kids of your own now, so we will give you time to go back and take care of them. Thank you very much.
They hardly ever even pick up their own toys, let alone work against their will.
Yeah,
thank you for taking my call.
And good luck getting them to pick up their toys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 60% of child labor happens in Asia, though many of the countries are signatories to the Convention on Child Labor. Arum Ratnawati is the ILO's National Child Labor Project Director in Indonesia. It's her job to translate these laws into reality for families facing enormously difficult decisions. And she joins us now on the phone from Indonesia's capital, Jakarta. And nice to have you with us today. Arum Ratnawati, can you hear us?
Hello.
Yes, hi there.
Yes, I can hear you.
Good. I wonder... Yes, we can hear you fine. I wondered if you could tell us if you've seen an increase in child workers since the beginning of the global recession. The report issued by the ILO last spring suggested that at least the rate of decrease is going down.
Yeah, right. Actually, in the case of Indonesia, if we look at the statistical data, the number of child laborers actually decreases. And it's a bit difficult to look at whether, you know, the current crisis is really affect the situation of child labor in Indonesia. But, you know, the trend in Indonesia, the number is decreased, but the market is still significant, especially in the informal sector and in agriculture.
And how do you convince parents that they should stop sending their children to work? This is an important part of their income.
Yeah, this is the ILO in Jakarta work with stakeholders, government, union, employers, as well as other stakeholders like non-government organizations to work on this issue, especially by advocating the government to have a policy, an enabling environment and legislation that can stop child labor in Indonesia.
Are businesses that hire children subject to penalties?
According to the law, the minimum age, for example, in Indonesia is 15 years old, because Indonesia already ratified the ILO Convention, both ILO Convention on minimum age as well as on versus child labor. And it's there in the national law that, employing children under minimum age is prohibited, as well as employing children in versus child labor also prohibited. The problem is that, the root causes of all of this is poverty. And sometimes legal approach alone is not effective. We have to also work from other sides, like, awareness raising, poverty alleviation, education program, etc. So the approach should be a multi-approach.
Arum Ratnawadi, we want to thank you very much for your views on this situation and your expertise. We know it's very late there, and we appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line, and let's see if we go next to, this is Kenneth. Kenneth with us from Charlotte.
Hi there. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I just wanted to comment that I'm in Charlotte now, but I grew up in Connecticut, and when I was 14, I picked tobacco to support my mother, who's a single mother. We were very poor.
Most people don't think of Connecticut as a tobacco-growing state, but up north near Hartford and between Hartford and Springfield,
Windsor Locks, actually, near the airport. That's where some of the best cigar wrappers in the world come from. And, you're up there in the humidity. This is during the summer. It's 40 hours a week, and a bunch of 14-year-olds dragging their butts through the dirt picking the tobacco. But I did that for $3.27 an hour, and to me back then that was a small fortune. So, and there were a lot of us. So it was definitely institutionalized.
And did you feel that, looking back on it, this was exploitation?
I don't. I mean, it was just during the summer. It wasn't forced. It was just something for a lot of poor kids to do. And it really did teach me very early on a very powerful work ethic that I still have to this day. So I think 14 years old, agriculture, it's kind of on the line, but it's definitely not emptying wastebaskets. But no, I think any younger than that, I think probably would be over the line.
Anybody get hurt?
No, just you couldn't get the tobacco juice off of you. It was a permanent fixture on you for the summer, so that was an issue. But
I can understand that, going to the friendlies with that stink on you.
Right, that's right.
Jane Stewart, this is the. I'm not sure those practices have changed much.
I think in some areas they have. But Kenneth, I'm with you. The part of Canada I come from was a tobacco belt as well, and
really?
Certainly it was common for kids to be out of school for a period of time to work in the fields. The challenge is, again, looking at the age, and I'm so happy that you were looking at it in terms of your capability as a 14-year-old to do some of the work that was out there, running the tractors, sitting on the back, popping the plants in or priming. And it can be very dangerous, and you've got to have certain strengths and you've got to have certain capacities and a mental agility to be able to participate in this kind of work. And I think that's an important point. I think something else that I'd like to highlight is you were talking about supporting your mom. And this is one of the real challenges in terms of the root causes of child labor. And why at the UN, for example, during the Millennium Development Goals, we're talking about the importance of having social protection floors in place, where there really are opportunities to help families who are poor or who are aged, like in Africa where the HIV/AIDS epidemic has just killed so many and grandparents are looking after children, to having cash transfers that will help them support the family if they can't make enough money themselves and therefore stem the need to send children to school. So this idea of, people who through no fault of their own are poor, to find ways through government policy and sharing to assist with that is essential to dealing with this issue of child labor, for sure.
Jane Stewart, where do they grow tobacco in Canada?
Really? You don't know, Neil?
No, I don't.
Well, I come from southwestern Ontario.
I figured the southern part.
In Norfolk County and Brant County, where I'm from, we had a pretty robust tobacco industry going.
And what kind of tobacco? It's the cigar wrapping tobacco as they grow up in northern Connecticut?
Well, or cigarettes mostly, yeah.
Cigarette tobacco.
For cigarette tobacco,
I did not know that. Well, thank you very much. You learned something
and,
new on
yeah,
this
we're now,
every
we're now,
day.
I mean, this is part of how agriculture changes, you know. I mean, that's not a big part of our agricultural economy anymore. And I think that's part and parcel of going back to Arcadia's question. Methods change and productivity improves. And these are some of the things that we have to bring to, for example, countries in Africa that are needing to improve the productivity of their agriculture to get kids out of labor.
Kenneth, thanks very much for your phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking with Jane Stewart, who's the Special Representative and Director of the International Labor Organization's Office to the United Nations about child labor. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And this from Andrea. I grew up on a farm in Minnesota in the middle child of five kids. I had to help my mom in the house and my dad in the field starting at about 6 years old. I was also farmed out to a neighbor as payment for field work he did for my dad. I drove heavy equipment, hay, swather, tractors, starting at around 14 years old before I had a driver's license. I never got paid for this work. I was told no work, no eat. If I complained, I was beaten. I was expected to work. Even my brother said I got it worse than them because I had to take care of them in the house, cleaning and cooking, and help my dad in the field and with the livestock. As a result, I learned how to work, but I have been very vulnerable to being taken advantage of by people who don't hesitate to use up a worker or take advantage of someone willing to work. And I'm not sure that that doesn't count as some sort of forced labor.
It's exactly what we're talking about. You know, I mean, and kids are vulnerable. Employers turn to children because they're cheap, because they don't stand up for their rights, because they're vulnerable. And these are the kinds of stories that really are at the heart of why this piece of policy and public policy is so critical.
Let's get next to Katie. Katie's with us from Greensboro, North Carolina. Excuse me.
Yes, that's me. Hello, Neil. Hi, Jane. Thank you
Hi,
for
Katie.
Having me.
Go ahead, please.
I was calling, actually, Jane, because you were talking a little earlier about some of the social pilot programs that you're running in the northeast of Brazil in the state of Bahia.
Mm.
And I lived in Brazil for about 3 years recently. I was actually in São Paulo, but I did do some traveling in the northeast. And one of the things that I noticed in Brazil, which I think is common in many countries, is that in addition to child labor in what we might refer to as more acceptable areas of work, such as agriculture, they have a large problem with child prostitution and children beggars on the streets, and parents who have, you know, baby after baby after baby after baby to send them out because people are more likely to give them money. So when you were talking about the program where you pay or the government pays these kids to go to school so the parents will no longer put them into child labor situations, a lot of these kids will go to school from, say, 7 in the morning till noon, and then they will be on the streets begging from 1 until midnight, or they'll be participating in prostitution in the afternoons and the evenings. And I shouldn't say participating because they're forced into it. And I was just wondering what your organization does to counter that. I don't know, how do you deal with this these kinds of issues?
Oh, it's an excellent question. It gets, again, at the heart of why we need integrated approaches to deal with child labor, Katie. It isn't only about providing social protection. It's also about having robust labor institutions in place and monitoring. It is about, having decent work for parents so that they're paid well enough so their kids don't have to go out and do this abhorrent kind of work. It is about... and Neil, you got to it earlier when you were talking about, you know, are employers taken to task if they hire children, or are Johns taken to task if they hire, you know, child prostitutes? You've got to have that capacity, and you've got to have the, the investment in policing and in labor market institutions. So it is an integrated approach. And so your question is well put, Katie, and I think speaks to the heart of the approach that we are taking in terms of this integrated and holistic approach.
We just have a few seconds left. Are you seeing improvements?
Are we seeing improvement?
Yeah,
you're asking me. In terms of the data, we still continue to see a decline in the worst forms of child labor, Neil. But the decline is... it's not as robust as it was say, between 2000 and 2004.
When the economy was a little bit
and
better.
And we're concerned about, again, you know, with this recession, will that have an increasing impact? Mm-hmm. We're seeing an increase, however, in places like sub-Saharan Africa, and particularly in boys age 15 to 17 in hazardous work. So we're following it extremely closely. And together the world came, many countries in The Hague, and recommitted to eliminating child labor by 2016. Everybody can help with that, and I'd encourage listeners to do so in any way they can.
Katie, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Jane Stewart, thank you very much for your time today.
Pleasure. Thank you, Neil.
Jane Stewart, Special Representative and Director of the International Labor Organization's Office to the UN, joined us from our bureau in New York. Coming up, conversations with Castro. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.